adjacent.
Okay. Just as I would be very opposed to have the same guy having the FBI and the CIA.
That sounds scary. Right. What kind of operations would the CIL have conducted within South Vietnam?
Well, operations aimed at the North Vietnamese.
Okay.
Or Cambodia.
Were CIO,
for example,
people, were they military? I understand most everybody in Vietnam of any responsibility had military rank. Were CIO generally military?
Well, they not
people?
Only had military rank. Right?
That sounds scary.
Right.
What kind of operations would the CIL have conducted within South Vietnam?
Well, operations aimed at the North Vietnamese.
Okay.
Or Cambodia.
Were CIO,
for example,
people, were they military? I understand most everybody in Vietnam of any responsibility had military rank. Were CIO generally military?
Well, they not
people?
Only had military rank. The officers and civilian officers.
And,
but I would say that the important people were all military.
In that case, how are they different than the military security service, the MSS?
Well, they have different responsibilities. Okay. The MSS was solely responsible for the security of the armed forces, similar to our own CIC.
So just uncovering agents who would be in the military,
correct.
So anything like that. The CIO...
Physical security of military installations,
okay.
Guarding against penetration.
Okay. Okay. But it still is a little bit unclear to me how the CIO is different than the special branch. I think I can understand in a sense where the lines might be different on paper, but out in a province where the special branch has its agents in a village, would the CIO also have a...
CIO would not be expected to operate in a village.
Is that one of the differences then?
It would be, CIO would be perhaps more strategic, and the special branch would be more tactical, and one of them had law enforcement functions and the other one does not.
Okay.
No, they're really quite different. CIA could not arrest somebody.
Okay, alright. They're not any kind of police in any sense of the word. You could
not
call them secret police or something like that.
Not at all.
Okay. Would they be involved then in the difference between strategic and tactical? Would they be involved in long-term agent cultivation?
Hopefully.
Yeah, okay. So they're trying to get into the upper reaches of enemy structure rather than the special branch, which is trying to get the lower level VCI.
And CIO, of course, is much smaller than special branch.
How much smaller? How big of an organization was it?
I don't remember the figure there.
More than 5,000 throughout the country?
Excuse me.
Difference between CIO and special branch. CIO is involved with long-term agent operations, special branch with short-term.
Let me put it this way. CIO was interested basically in intelligence.
Okay.
Special branch was interested in wiping out the Viet Cong and other anti-government activities. in the process of which it also collected intelligence.
Okay.
Because you needed intelligence for the law enforcement task.
Okay. Okay. And the special branches, I understand it came under field operations. That's the province officer in charge.
Field operations of who?
CIA.
Well,
the American Advisory.
CIA maintained liaison with the special branch at all levels.
Okay.
We talked with them in Saigon. Mm-hmm. We talked with them in the four regional capitals, and we talked with them at the province level.
Okay, so who is the Vietnamese military officer or whomever who reports to Binh and is head of in, special branch?
In my days, let's see, in my days we had Brigadier General Thai, T-A-Y, and his deputy was Colonel Minh, M-I-N-H.
And they would report to Binh.
That is
and
correct.
Would he determine their policy, basically?
Yes.
Okay. And if it could be said that you then had a counterpart in the Vietnamese government, would it have been Binh?
My counterpart, strictly speaking, would have been Binh, yes.
Okay. Did you...
The parallel isn't exact because, of course, I had no law enforcement function.
Right.
So my counterpart was Binh in his capacity as head of the CIO.
Okay.
In actual fact, I had no counterpart because Vietnam being what it was, and the CIA station being what it was, I had all kinds of contacts with the government other than Binh.
Is that proper? Is that the way a station should be set up?
Well, Vietnam is very exceptional, but actually most countries are exceptional in the sense that each country is different.
And none of them parallel.
And none of them are exactly
like the United States anyway, I suppose. Okay. All right. Within the organization of the station, there's a chief of station, his deputy, and I understand John Tilton was your deputy for a while.
Yes, I had, he was one of my deputies.
Mm-hmm. Is there also an executive officer in a station? Is that an administrative job that would just...
Normally in a station you do not have an executive officer. That Jack, we had one, I did not.
Okay. Could you just simply tell me why he would have one and you wouldn't?
Well, in the first place, the station was larger in his days.
Okay.
In the... When I took over, it was quite obvious that the American effort was in Vietnam was beginning to wind down.
Okay. Is it an administrative position, I guess, is basically what I was...
Well, the way Shackley used it was an exclusively administrative position.
Okay.
But I felt both in Vietnam and in a similar size station that I had, which was Germany, that the executive officer wasn't doing anything that the chief of administration shouldn't be doing.
Okay, all right. Okay. Do you know who Shackley's executive officer was?
He had an Irish name, but I don't know what I don't remember it now.
Okay, that was just something I was interested to know as, I guess it's just something that Chief of Station has the prerogative of staffing the way he feels he should.
Uh, Actually, each chief of station operates with a table of organization that's given to him by headquarters.
Okay.
And its headquarters determines the size of the station.
Okay.
And once headquarters tells me that I can have, say, 400 people, then I have a considerable say-so in how those 400 people are going to be utilized.
Does that include contract agents?
Depends. Contract agents are part of your authorized strength. You just can't go out and hire. Contract agents come in many different colors. For the purpose of this discussion, I'm speaking of staff employees.
Okay.
U.S. civil servant staff employees payrolled out of Washington.
Okay, very good. Was the Pacification Security Coordination Division still in effect when you were there under a man named Bob Eschbach?
Yes, it was still in effect when I came to Vietnam for my orientation trip, and I think it was phased out very early in 72.
Do you know what it, what, can you tell me what it was and what it did?
I have no idea.
Okay. I think we've probably covered as much as you know about Prue and Phoenix and ticks and stuff. Do you think there's anything you would add on those subjects?
No, I think I already made it clear that Prue, by the time I got there, was a relatively small, not uncontroversial, but nevertheless small and not terribly significant activity.
PIX continued to be play a role in importance in special branch operation.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Did you ever visit the National Interrogation Center? Was that part of your duties to go down there?
I visited the National Interrogation Center, yes.
Okay. And you would actually debrief people who were there and...
Did I?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Who handled anti-VCI activities within Saigon, not in the provinces? Was that also just a special branch?
You mean on the Vietnamese side?
Yes.
Yes, it was a special branch.
Okay. Because in none of the Phoenix organizational structures is there any place for Saigon. It's just set up for the provinces and the regions, and I'm just wondering how that might have been handled.
It was a special branch responsibility.
Okay. Now maybe discuss some personalities. Your opinion of William Colby? You know.
I never served with Bill Colby.
Okay. Ted Shackley, you said you knew him from South America?
Well, I'd known all these people for a long time. Although Colby and I never actually crossed paths, because when he was in the East Asia Division, I was in the Europe or Latin America Division.
Mm-hmm.
When he came back to Washington, I went to Argentina.
Okay.
I went to Vietnam, he was already back in Washington.
Okay. Everybody knows everybody by reputation.
Also personally, because, you know, the super grades, you know what a super grade is.
GS-15?
No, 16.
16, okay.
Those are the generals, the flag officers of CIA.
Okay.
You know, they have their own dining room and, they meet at all kinds of social affairs and professional meetings, and so they all know each other.
And you were a GS-16?
I was a GS-17 and 18 too.
Okay.
But I have been a GS-16 for many years.
Since maybe...
Since 1963.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's
All right. Ted Shackley, I've known since 1951, as I mentioned. When I got to Vietnam, I have known him for 20 years.
Okay.
What is my opinion? Ted is an extremely competent, hardworking, goal-oriented man, an excellent briefer, and very accomplished professional intelligence manager.
In his book, now for a more sensitive subject, Frank Snepp said 30,000 Phoenix agents defiles for 30,000 Phoenix agents were left behind in South Vietnam. Any truth to that statement? In his book, Decent Interval, he makes a statement, files for 30,000 Phoenix agents were left behind.
Frank Snepp makes many claims in Decent Interval, and I don't know that I want to engage in rebutting Mr. Snepp or arguing with his findings.
Okay. Can you speak, if this is the one instance that I would mention that book and his allegations? Because my book is on Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
and because he says in the book, the files on 30,000 Phoenix agents were left behind, my understanding is there's no such thing as a Phoenix agent anyway, right. That Phoenix did not have agents.
I don't know that there were 30,000 Phoenix agents. I will say this, because of the circumstances that preceded the collapse of South Vietnam,
mm-hmm.
I'm not confident that all sensitive South Vietnamese government parts were destroyed. I'm
okay.
not confident of that at all. I am absolutely sure that all sensitive U.S. Embassy and CIA parts were destroyed.
Okay.
But I'm not sure what happened on the South Vietnamese side, and perhaps I should explain why I am not sure.
Okay.
When President Hsu resigned, as I recall, on the 21st of April, we had an orderly transition to the vice president. The vice president made personnel changes in key positions.
And this is Key himself?
No, I'm not talking Key. I'm talking about the vice president who succeeded Hsu. What was his name? Old Man Hong.
Okay.
The old man who was practically blind and appointed a new police chief. He appointed a new national security advisor.
Okay.
And General Binh and General Huang made an orderly turnover of their office, including their files, to their successors.
Okay.
You know, Huang's place was taken by a highly respected bureaucrat. His name escapes me, but he was a former Minister of Justice, and then this was taken by another army general. Okay. Now, the Huang regime lasted 8 days, and then General Minh came.
Yeah, Big Minh.
Big Minh.
Yeah.
And then Big Minh replaced the people that Huang has appointed.
Okay.
You know, so within a period of maybe 9 days, we had three chiefs of police, we had three national security advisors, we had new people in the CIO, we had new people in the special branch, and God knows what happened to the files.
Okay. I understand. My question is not so much the files as this notion that there were 30,000 Phoenix agents.
Phoenix.
You know, I mean, the statement makes it sound as if Phoenix was still in effect and had 30,000 agents in a field. That's no. This is what a reader intuits from. That's what this suggests.
That is, I think, completely wrong. I don't think that Phoenix ever had 30,000 agents. If by agents you mean sources,
that's what I mean. That's what I. That's what.
But when you say, as in the course of its 15 years history or whatever, Phoenix talked to 30,000 people, sure, they probably talked to a lot more than that.
Okay. And would that, would he be specifically meaning special branch?
Who?
Snap, when he
says
this.
How do I know? I think you got to talk to Snap.
Okay.
I tell you a little story about Mr. Snap.
Please do. He's not been for, I called him up, and he was not at all amenable to talking
when,
to me.
When, after Mr. Snap wrote his book, which was published in the fall of 1977, he asked the Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee to investigate his charges. And the Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee had a subcommittee on investigation, which at that time was headed by Senator Robert Morgan of North Carolina, which incidentally is the state where Snap comes from.
That's right.
And Morgan held hearings for a couple of weeks and then dismissed Snap's charges as being essentially unfounded.
Well, this is what...
Snap said he didn't get a fair hearing because Morgan and his people could not conceivably have had time during that period of several weeks looking to all those charges. And Senator Morgan, who was, before he became senator, for 9 years Attorney General of North Carolina, said that as far as he's concerned, once he establishes that a man lies, he doesn't want to spend a lot of the taxpayers' money on establishing it, just how much detail has he lied.
Okay. This is, you know, my... One of the things that I've had to do is to debunk some of the myths of Phoenix. And I think that if I write, a good place to start would be with the blanket statement that there were 30,000 Phoenix agents. That's because I have not been able to substantiate that at all. And I called up Snap on the phone and I said, you know, what do you mean by 30,000 agents? And he said, I'm not going to do your research for you.
Right.
And I said, I'm not asking you to do my research for me. I'm just asking you to tell me what you mean by 30,000. And he would not say.
Look, Phoenix was essentially a militarized extension of the special branch. That would be my definition of the program.
But at the heart of it, it is the special branch, the special branch system, which I understand in the in 65 and 66. In 1965, there were maybe 14 province officers in all of Vietnam. And the CIA...
By who?
Excuse me?
14 officers of who?
CIA, province officers. Who were involved with the, as liaisons to the special branch.
Oh.
Okay? And that the field operations branch of the CIA built that up so that there was a CIA province officer in charge of each province by the end of 1967, and as he his main responsibility was advising the special branch, but he also coordinated all the other CIA activities within a province. But that at the heart of the operations was the special branch. Is that accurate understanding of how that... And then Phoenix was imposed on top of that, but that because the special branch was running the picks...
I do not know what happened in the 60s, frankly. I really do not know.
Okay.
I was in Europe until 1965. And after that, I was in South America. And I didn't concern myself with the affairs in Vietnam, which was a place where I felt I never would be going.
It does seem a little unusual.
And nobody could have been more surprised. I was stationed in Buenos Aires. I was a DS-17, which equals a major general. And I felt, well, I'm safe from Vietnam because I'm too senior to be a deputy, uh-huh. and surely they wouldn't make me the chief.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I was wrong. But
what was the reasoning behind that? Do you know?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. First, I have had a lot of experience working with the U.S. military. And despite the great dissimilarity of our backgrounds, I managed to get along very well with a number of senior American generals.
Okay.
And secondly, my years in Argentina
mm-hmm.
have given me quite a familiarity with the problem of subversion, violence, military government, working with local military special branch type operations and so forth.
Okay.
In Germany, as a young officer, I was special assistant to the chief of mission, and the organization of the German station in those days, with over 1,000 people, was very similar to what there was at that time in Vietnam, 15, 18 years later.
Okay. Where is that?
And lastly, and this is the most important, the guy who was slated to go to Vietnam, who would have been a very obvious choice, spent all his time in the East Asia, was deputy chief of the East Asia division, was chief of station in Tokyo, would have been the logical successor, had a family tragedy, and he had to resign from CIA and take over the family business because nobody else could run it.
Who was that?
Joe Smith.
Okay.
What's called Big Joe Smith, because we also had a Little Joe Smith.
Okay, like Big Man and Little Man.
Yeah.
Okay, very interesting.
And he resigned on very short notice, mm-hmm. where without the chief of station,
mm-hmm.
Without an obvious choice for a chief of station. I was involved in Argentina in a spectacular hijacking episode where I talked the hijackers into surrendering.
That's right, you put pills in their coat or something like that.
Well, I didn't actually. That's not true at all.
That's not true.
Not true at all. They got their pills from a doctor at the Lima airport.
Uh-huh.
I found out from the doctor what kind of pill it was. So then I sent some beer to the airplane because the Argentine doctor was telling me that if you feed them alcohol on top of those pills, they are going to be dead on their feet.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that was pretty spectacular.
Well, anyway, and it happened just at that time.
Yeah.
And Kissinger, Helms was flying out to San Clemente, and he meets Kissinger, and they talk about this, and Kissinger had known me before.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, had asked once that I be assigned to work with him, and I think the idea was born that I should go to Vietnam.
Uh-huh. Okay. Is the German station in Bonn?
Well, the German station is all over Germany.
Isn't there a headquarters?
Headquarters is in Bonn.
Yes, in Bonn. Okay. Because I know everybody thinks it would be in Berlin,
the CIA station, with one exception, is where the ambassador, where the American ambassador is.
Okay.
That's where the station is.
Well, that basically are the questions that I have for you. I could talk. I'm sure I could talk to you all day and ask you questions about your background. Maybe you could, just for the fun of it, tell me what you think of this American involvement in Central America, in Nicaragua in particular.
Well, I tell you,
having had that kind of experience,
the United States is a constitutional republic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the president is elected. The president runs foreign policy. The Congress authorizes the money to run the foreign policy of the United States and has a very limited veto power. Okay. Now, the president has embarked on a set of policies in Central America which I personally feel are dead wrong. But I do not question his right to pursue those policies.
Yeah.
And there is no question in my mind that CIA, when directed by the president, is duty-bound to carry out those policies as well as it can.
Is that so? You don't think that CIA is leading the president, that Bill Casey is leading the president into these policies? Do you think it's just following Reagan's advice?
I do not know what Bill Casey says to the president. I know Bill Casey quite well. A couple of months ago, we were together on a symposium on terrorism. We were both speakers in a symposium on terrorism. Bill is a very strong-minded person, and he has very firm ideas on a great many topics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question in my mind that he is a strong ideological ally of the president. They are the same age, they have similar backgrounds, they have had somewhat similar formative experiences, and I think they understand each other. I think one has to make a distinction between what CIA, between Casey as the president's friend and advisor,
mm-hmm.
and the CIA as an organization with Casey as its head.
Mm-hmm.
Casey is a very strong director,
mm-hmm.
and I have no doubt at all that he will push CIA in the direction
mm-hmm.
which he thinks will do the president's policies the most good.
Okay.
But I don't think CIA has the rank and file. The structure of CIA does not get to vote on these things.
Yeah.
You know, they are a hierarchic organization. They follow orders.
Mm-hmm.
And the only recourse a CIA officer, regardless of rank, is to resign. So that's a very difficult decision, and mm-hmm. people do not do that casually.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not all that many resignable issues. Now, people will go to great pains to perhaps to avoid assignment to Central American Affairs, or we'll think of 99 reasons why they cannot become chief of station in Tegucigalpa.
Okay.
But CIA has no choice in the matter. So I think that CIA again is going to get an awful lot of bad publicity
mm-hmm.
for something that they absolutely cannot help.
Okay. Seems to be the case, although the National Security Council seems to, the spotlight seems to be shifting to, away from the CIA towards the National Security Council.
Yeah, but it will shift back because mm-hmm. in 1984 when the Boland Amendment became effective, CIA was specifically prohibited from engaging in operations against Nicaragua in support of the Contras. This was after the mining of the port and the assassination manual or whatever. Now, that amendment
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
has been abolished by the vote of Congress this summer.
I stay a very close, right. close abreast.
So now CIA is probably going to get geared up again,
mm-hmm.
and I have no doubt that there will be Nicaragua task force,
yeah.
and that they are going to put a hungry GS-16 in charge, who thinks that this is his way to become a GS-18 quickly. And there's going to be a lot of motion and a lot of noise.
Okay.
And then there's going to be a reaction to it.
Are they going to try and form a provisional government in some remote Nicaraguan province and declare a provisional government and do all that kind of stuff?
I doubt it, because unless they can put in an awful lot of sophisticated anti-aircraft,
mm-hmm.
those Soviet armored helicopters are going to take out whatever site
okay.
they establish themselves in.
What about the new F-16s going to Honduras?
No, it has nothing to do
with it. Okay. Well, that's really it. Did Lou Lathan...
The F-16s are a bribe to the Honduran government.
To stay...
To tolerate the presence of the Contras.
Okay. Back to Vietnam. Did Lou Lathan stay on after you became...
Lou Lathan?
Lathan.
Oh, no. Lou Lathan was before Shackley.
Okay.
When I got to Vietnam, Lou Lathan was chief in Thailand.
Oh, okay. Maybe I should ask you, while I got you here, a little... What do you think about Iran and the McFarlane, I guess it was. Did McFarlane really go?
Certainly.
He did.
Without any question. The Iranian ambassador says they have tape recordings of his telephone conversations.
Yeah.
And, you know, on things like that, I'm inclined to believe him.
How does it happen that a government that, in a country that can be so close to the United States for 20 years, yes. like Iran, and I have friends whose yeah. fathers worked there in the oil business, and they went there as kids, and everything was so fine, and the Iranians were wonderful people, and then government changes, and the Iranians become the villains of the world. Yeah. Is that all just public information management?
Do you ever hear of divorce?
Okay. Well put.
I mean, if you go to a divorce hearing
mm-hmm.
and you read these depositions that husbands and wives mm-hmm. give against the person with whom they have lived together maybe
That's right.
for 30 years.
Okay. Brilliant. Well,